Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 1st, 2018. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. Good morning. I love how you strain to say the date so carefully, so accurately.
Well, it's so cool. I was actually concerned about getting tongue-tied because I've been saying July, which
yes.
It takes more muscle movement to say August, and especially when I'm following, saying before that Wednesday. So Wednesday, August 1st. That took some effort. And that wonderful laugh is Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I clearly have my diction down today.
Indeed.
Go me. We should just start talking about stuff because we're going to run out of time if we don't.
We're going to run out of time anyway, spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Apple's third fiscal quarter earnings report was yesterday afternoon, and Apple reported earning all the money.
Oh, it was only almost all the money. They're doomed.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see. Revenue was up 17% year over year, $53.3 billion. Record earnings, $2.34 a share. That's up 40% year over year.
Which is a net of $11.5 billion, I calculated.
That's pretty impressive. And let's see, what else do we have? Oh, so the stock closed at $190.29, but today it shot up over $200 and has been hovering a little over $200 like since mid morning.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive.
What I noticed was that the last Q4, Jeff, Q4 17, the revenue was $52.6 billion. Mm-hmm. And their forecast yesterday, as I recall, was between 60 and 62.
For next quarter?
For Q4, yeah.
Hold on. I'm scanning through Brian's article because I'm pretty sure it's in there. Let's see. Apple. Oh, no. That's their guidance for that quarter. How did Brian include the guidance for this? Oh, here it is. It's all at the bottom. Between 60 and 60.2 billion for the September quarter. Gross margins are expected to be between 38% and 38.5%.
So that's a $10 billion jump over Q4 17. That stuck out at me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So does that mean maybe we'll be seeing new products?
Well, you know, there is this mantra going around about the iPhone sales being a little stagnant, that the quarterly sales are not jumping. If you look at the sales by quarter for 2018, mm-hmm. they're almost a mirror by quarter of 2017. It jumps up in the Christmas quarter, and the other quarters are within a few million units of each other. And so we're not seeing tremendous growth in iPhone sales. And Tim Cook was asked about that yesterday during the earnings report. And he says, but it's a great business to be in. And they're making a whole lot of money because their ASPs are going up.
Well, and the other thing to think about there is that part of the issue, like part of what causes that, is that the bulk of the wave, because, you know, the Christmas quarter is October, November, December. iPhones usually come out at the end of September. So the bulk of people who get a new phone get one in the last 3 months of the year. Anyway, like there's only a few days usually, a very small number of days where an iPhone is available in Q3 instead of in Q4 instead of Q1, you know, the Christmas quarter. So the bulk of the new iPhone fever is usually Christmas quarter, because Christmas quarter starts in October, which is basically when most people start getting their phones. So that to me is another interesting piece of that statistic, is because they've got the bulk of new phone fever and Christmas same quarter. So that quarter is always going to be higher.
Last quarter, they pulled in $88 billion, Kelly, $88.3 in last Christmas quarter. Uh-huh. They could hit a $100 billion quarter this year from the Christmas quarter. Not unrealistic.
Yes. Not at all. And I could see it. The thing that stood out to me in the statistics of all of this is when Apple was talking about stock buybacks, because I kept seeing this statistic go around about Apple spending $22.8 billion buying back shares. Mm-hmm. Companies buy back shares all the time. But what was interesting to me about that is the context of that number, because in a lot of cases, when we listen to these earnings calls, like, it's still a little weird to me to hear Apple report these kind of numbers, because I remember when Apple basically didn't have two shares of stock to rub together and, you know, for heat. And the thing that strikes me about these numbers is when you put them into stuff, like when I used to put together the iPhone sales, you know, it means that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the entire quarter, Apple sold 5 iPhones every second, you know, or whatever it was. When you look at those numbers, the $22.8 billion Apple buyback number would have bought outright 275 companies in the Standard & Poor 500 stock, top 500 index.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
And then they said they're going to spend another $100 billion on that stock, on buying back more stock.
I was reading an article about that yesterday, and there seems to be another continuing thesis that companies should use this buyback money to give their employees raises, which would fold into the economy and boost the economy. Instead, it's being used to increase the value of the company's stock, and so it's not being used in an economically productive way to improve the GDP. Anyway, that's
but
the
that's
thesis.
Only because we don't know if that's we don't know
thesis.
Anything about we don't know anything about benefits of being an Apple employee. Maybe you get a certain amount of stock and maybe it vests after a certain amount of time. I don't know, but I've worked at lots of companies where that's the case. Like, you have the option of so much and you have the option to get more.
Only a select number of employees get those stock options.
I've also had stock options that weren't worth the paper they were printed on, but that's a story for another day. The other thing that was interesting to me, because this is like, these numbers aren't necessarily concrete to me. I am not an Apple shareholder. Like, I do not directly own Apple stock. I may have money in a fund that does, but I personally didn't go out and buy Apple stock. The dividend increase is greater. This was another number I found that was interesting. Apple's $2 billion dividend is greater than 450 of the S&P 500 companies pay in an annual dividend. So, wow. 90 of those companies pay zero, which includes Berkshire Hathaway, by the way, which is Warren Buffett, who I just saw yesterday, like, went on an interview and was like, oh, yeah, I'm totally buying more Apple stock.
Aren't they the number one company? Did you say indirectly or directly that they're the number one company in dividend payouts in the U.S.?
They pay zero dividend. So they're the opposite.
I mean Apple.
Apple's their increase, just the increase in dividend, is greater than 450 of the 500 companies in the S&P 500.
Wow.
And that's the increase, not the dividend itself, just the increase in that, which I think was like 10 cents, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
On the dividend,
that
something like
that?
That
sounds about right.
So anyway, I thought that was really interesting. And those numbers are always interesting to me, because some of that stuff is stuff that helps ground those numbers for me. Because like $100 billion is just sort of an ephemeral thing to me. Like, I have no concept of that scale, you know. So like, that's just, there's a point where all of it becomes lots of money. And I just sort of think of it as lots of money. And so I don't have any concept of, you know, $100 billion. So when I look at numbers like this, like, they could basically buy all, you know, more than half of the S&P 500. Like, that tells me something about what that number actually means. So I thought that was a really interesting thing to get to see.
What I find interesting is the amount they're spending on R&D.
Oh, it's like you read my mind. That's exactly where I was just about to head. So with the money Apple's spending on R&D, they're on mm-hmm. track to be the largest R&D spender mm-hmm. in the world. And they're looking at it's absolutely ridiculous how much money they are projected to be spending on R&D in 2018. I believe it's $14 billion.
Oh, my goodness. Now, yeah. Did they say that?
No, because...
We're just seeing this in other numbers.
Yeah, the trends that Apple has right now are saying that.
Okay.
And so to see what they're really spending on R&D, we have to wait for other financial documents that Apple submits throughout the year. And then you can figure it out from that.
Where is that money showing up in the product?
That's what I'm wondering, because we're not seeing that much that's new and different and innovative that would account for the amount of money they're spending. And
yet,
I can't think that Apple is just burning away money on worthless R&D. They're working on stuff that we haven't seen, as Kelly said, yet. And so I'm wondering, what market do you guys see as a place where Apple can really have a big impact with this R&D spending?
Well, the first thing I would say, this has nothing to do with the theory, but I'm curious, if you were to go back to like 2005, 2006, and look at when R&D spending spiked then, you could probably map out the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of 2005, all of a sudden R&D shot up, you know, and it doesn't have to be a dramatic number, but all of a sudden it was dramatically higher, and then it stayed dramatically higher. And then just over a year later, we got an iPhone. You know, I could see that. So I wonder if I'm of two minds about what they're doing with it. And the first is that they might be doing stuff that's failing. It's just that they can fail on a much bigger scale than they used to be able to.
That's a good point, Kelly.
You know, like, I am 100% convinced, and no one will ever change my mind on this, so don't even try. In this case, I do not look forward to your letters. That there is a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro in some form roaming the Apple campus with a 4G chip built into it so that you don't have to rely on Wi-Fi if you don't want to. And that someone decided the battery life was crap, or it was a millimeter too thick, or whatever. And that's why we haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. It's that. Or an iPhone in a weird size, or, you know, a couple, maybe there's two now failed iterations of iPad mini or Mac mini or Mac Pro that we never got to see. And so someone decided to kill it.
I think a lot of it's going into Siri. That's my guess.
Okay.
Because Siri.
Define your parameters for Siri.
Well, the future of AI is pretty clear, and Apple's been beaten up a little bit for not having a sophisticated enough AI agent. This Loop Ventures analysis notwithstanding, Siri needs to do a whole lot more for us. And if you look at the landscape of artificial intelligence and all the work that's being done, it's clear that talking to our home and talking to our phones and our computers is the future. And there's tremendous strides that need to be made in that area. You know how you have a little voice in your head that you can have a conversation with sometimes?
I'm not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, we're not supposed to say that.
I read an article at Science News about an AI that interrogates other AIs to establish how they think and their values and predict their behavior. And so,
oh, I know that study. It's called Westworld.
that was in Friday's Particle Debris. So I think there's a lot of work to be done on having AIs become more self-aware and person-aware in terms of intuiting what it is that the speaker wants. Right now, you know, we're in a situation where there's minimum intuition and mostly English text parsing, and for privacy purposes, Siri is not highly integrated into our phone. So there's a lot of work to be done on having Siri be more conversational with us, relaxed, be able to ask clarifying questions, you know, seem more human and more introspective. And that's got to take a lot of money.
I'm assuming you're right. It's getting the whole voice assistant, artificial intelligence technology thing to work on the scale that people expect where it's conversational, where it understands context, where it can parse mm-hmm. out complex statements and get it right. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, that's really, really hard stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that we've talked about before, because I know, like, I've talked on this show and others about how I, like, the first thing that made me happy about the S lady was that she could hear me and mostly understand me, because I have a female voice and lots of assistants simply can't hear me, and or what they can hear isn't enough to be useful when they're when it's parsing my words. Mm-hmm. So that to me, so first of all, that was super frustrating. So the fact that she could even approximate what I was trying to say, even if I wasn't saying it correctly. Like, remember when she first came out, you sort of had to learn to speak her language in order to get her to do what you wanted. That's gotten a lot better over time. And we've sort of seen ripples of her around, like in the Siri watch face. And in what we see in iOS 12, with the context of stuff, you normally order coffee at 8:30 every morning. So now it's going to pop up and ask you, like, is it time for you to order coffee? And those sorts of things are some of the intelligence that comes from Siri. So I think, John, you might be correct about that. But I think the place that you are ultimately heading with this is having Siri in more than a phone or more than a HomePod speaker, and more like a HomePod speaker that can go from room to room with you and do stuff for you.
Sounds very familiar.
And I don't mean a Roomba that you can just tell that you can tell to play music or something like that. Like, more like Rosie from the Jetsons, I think, is probably where you see it heading. And I know you have a soft spot for robots. And you watch that space pretty closely. So
I do.
Is that where you think is going?
Well, yeah, I think eventually Apple, even if Apple shows no signs. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe they do. Maybe their autonomous work is for automobiles is bleeding over into autonomous robots.
Well, they can
move around and navigate safely.
Mm-hmm. Tim has alluded to, Tim Cook, Apple CEO, has alluded to the idea that using artificial or developing artificial intelligence is a really great totally have my sentence backwards. If you want to develop real serious artificial intelligence, design a self-driving car, and the technology that you create for mm-hmm. your artificial intelligence will be much better. That's what Tim has been alluding to.
Right, because like the technology, like the software pieces and the subroutines and all that that you have to build for hey car, don't hit stuff are probably pretty scalable to hey robot, don't walk into walls.
Or don't run over my kid who's playing on the floor on the carpet.
Right.
And identify the difference between objects in its field of vision, including people mm-hmm. and pets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay, so the money that Apple's investing in R&D right now, I think, John, you're right. A lot of it's going to Siri, and by extension, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And something that we've all discussed before, which is getting into the personal home robot market is mm-hmm. really hard and really expensive. So the small players, they keep coming and going, and we don't get products, which plays into something you've said, John, which is you need to have a lot of money to make robots, which means only the big companies like Amazon, Google, Apple. These are the places we need to look for these personal robots.
Can I tell you what just ran through my mind while you were talking?
Sure. And then we'll have
to wrap up because I had this vision of a family robot sitting on the couch. And the cat sees something warm and big and human-like and big eyes and jumps into the robot's lap and starts purring. And then the robot needs to jump up and take care of some errands. So it picks up the cat and puts it on the floor and it squeezes a little too hard.
Oops. Oh, no.
Oops. I killed the cat.
Well, that escalated quickly. I can't let us end on that note.
That's so not where I was expecting it to go. John, no, I thought you were going to say the robot is programmed to act more human. So when the cat jumps on its lap, it pets it.
Yeah, that's
right,
what I figured.
Right, right. Well, that's the point I'm trying to make exactly, is that the distinction between a little bit too much pressure and the grace to, you know, pet a purring cat on your lap, we think of as minor for humans, but it's huge for a computer.
Well, so the thing that I think about when I think about this is that one thing that new companies have that like start up and want to build a robot, a home robot, is I have no idea who you are. So there is no trust. There is no relationship with this company, whoever it is. And even if it's just maybe a very large company from another country that I just haven't heard of, like there may be a company in Japan that makes awesome home assistant robots. But if I've never heard of that company, I don't have any relationship with them. I'm never going to have a Google robot in my house because Google. And I'm far more likely to have a walking around manifestation of Siri because I trust Apple. Because Apple keeps telling me, like, we don't have your data and we don't want to and we're not interested in it and your data is yours. And like the Siri stuff, you know, more and more of that is happening on device, so it doesn't have to go anywhere else for processing. So Siri can get smarter, you know, Kelly, for you,
Kelly,
personally.
The best robot is the robot you train as a family member.
Right.
The robot comes into the house, open the box, it's naive, it's got great capability.
Yeah.
You raise it as a family member, it knows to keep the data private. And it grows as a child with the family, becomes a trusted member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that robot's got to come from somewhere. And I'm assuming that there's still going to be some point where it's going to have to get on Wi-Fi for something, or it's going to have to phone home for some reason.
Well, that goes to the interrogation ability of the robot. Hey, Frank. What are you doing? Who are you talking to? You know, why are you on my Wi-Fi? What kind of data are you uploading? And the robot says, John, don't worry. I'm only uploading performance data for analysis. It's not very dangerous. You can trust me. I'm not sharing any family data.
Right. But see, I'm more likely to believe that robot if it's a robot from Apple that says that than if it's a robot from Google that says that. Like, personally, where I am at today, that's my stance. And like, I know that Curry is gone now, Curry. But I had no idea who that company was, what their deal was. We had no relationship.
Until I told you about it.
Right. Like, that's the thing. But like, I have no relationship with them. So, hey, this new company is making a home robot. Like, I have to start from zero. You know, we have to go on a couple of dates and have some coffee and talk about like what they're into and what's your favorite record and, you know, Beatles or Elvis and on and on. And we have to figure out like how that relationship is going to go. And I know you don't know
what happens
company,
what happens when the next company comes out with an even more fabulous robot, like this super duper amazing robot from Amazon. Do you take Curry and shut her down and put her in a closet and wait? Sorry, like, you're decommissioned. We wasted $1,000.
Right. She doesn't, and it's not like she fits in a drawer. So, like, that's, you know, and then what? You know, every 18 months we get a new, way more awesome robot. What do I do with the old one? You know, and then you start getting into environmental issues like recycling responsibly.
You march it to the recycling center.
Okay. I see now I followed John right back into the dark places. So. So Jeff, I'm out. I tried to end on something a little more interesting and thought provoking, and I just ended up marching robots to the recycling slaughterhouse.
All right. Well, since we're out of time, I'm coming up with something. Okay, I've got it.
And I broke the John bot. So I guess we should call it.
We're gonna have to put him back in the closet and reboot him. All right. So I am wrapping us up, but here's a happier end of life for all the robots that people will ultimately discard. There will be robot retirement homes. So these robots, instead of having to go through, what do you mean you're going to wipe my memory? What do you mean I'm going to be disassembled? They get to go to the robot retirement home where they play
bridge and they announce 7 no Trump.
Right, and they get to interact with other robots, and there'll be people there. Maybe they partner them in assisted living homes where the robots can continue to be productive and functional and not go into a landfill, and they can still help people. And it's not the same thing as
Jeff,
taking the dog out to the farm.
No, it's like it's the Daisy Hill Puppy Farm. Adorable. It's a real place.
It's a real place.
Off to the farm, the funny farm. I'm off.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well,
now we need to reboot John. We have to go.
Yeah. Okay. So we're out of time.
He's going to start singing Daisy. It's going to be awful.
I'm
sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Okay. Kelly, do you know where the reset button is on John? Can you reach it from where
you are?
I do.
Okay. I can.
Just below my left ear.
I need my tiny Phillips screwdriver. Hold on a sec.
Yep. All right. Well, while you're rebooting John, I'm going to thank both of you for being here today. John, thank you very much.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thanks.
And Kelly, thank you for being here as well.
It was my pleasure.
And listeners, I am so glad that you were here, and I hope you buckled up for the ride today, because frankly, I think I could have sat back and just had popcorn and let these two go. So anyhow, thank you everyone for being here today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.